Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A parliament is on course to pass the Labour Amendment Bill as it seeks to stop continuing job losses in the country.
Bread shortages loom as wheat production is hampered by inadequate power supply in the country.
Our system is fairly old in terms of generating plants. The youngest generating plant we have is Wangay 5 and 6, which was installed in 1987.
The Southern African Development Community Heads of State Summit ended in Botswana's capital, Gaborone, today with a call for the region to find ways to accelerate industrialization.
I'm confident that this strategy, if implemented effectively, has the potential of unlocking opportunities beyond our borders.
These stories and much, much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Bread shortages are looming in the country as the Agriculture and Mechanization Ministry says the inadequacy of power supply in the farming sector is impacting on wheat production in the country. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Speaking at a meeting held in the capital today between farmers and representatives of the Energy and Agriculture Ministries, the Director of Mechanization in the Agriculture and Mechanization Ministry, Rabson Gumbo, said wheat production in the country was now down to 12% because of the shortage of electricity. As a result, Gumbo told the meeting that Zimbabwe was now importing wheat in order to meet local demand.
One national requirement for wheat is 4,500 metric tons. The country is only producing 4% of that, with 88% being made through imports. Imports, 50% as unprocessed wheat and 50% as flour. This limited production capacity is increasingly undermined by unreliable power supply for irrigation.
But Patson Mbiriri, permanent secretary in the Energy and Power Development Ministry, said most consumers were not paying their debts to the Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority, resulting in the power utility failing to generate enough power for the country at large. Mbiriri said consumers were owing the power utility over $1 billion in unpaid debts.
Secondly, ZESA is a huge utility. It has debts, some of them historical debts, dating back prior to hyperinflation. Of course, debts relating to the construction of Wangay itself. These debts must be honored. They must be honored. We must repay. We don't have a very good reputation as a country in terms of repaying our debts. That must improve if perceptions about Zimbabwe are going to change. We must honor our debts.
The official said power generation in Zimbabwe was also being affected by obsolete equipment at most thermal stations.
Our system is fairly old in terms of generating plants. The youngest generating plant we have is Wangay 5 and 6, which was installed in 1987, or commissioned in 1987. So 20 odd years. It's been in existence.
Some agricultural experts and economists say the shortage of wheat in the country may result in a nationwide shortage of bread and an increase in the price of the commodity. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Parliament's lower house, the National Assembly, is tonight set to pass the Labour Amendment Bill, which seeks to repeal common law provisions that have been used by employers to fire workers on 3 months' notice without terminal benefits. The National Assembly earlier in the day overturned a ruling by its parliamentary legal committee led by ZANU-PF legislator Fortune Chasi that said the bill contravened the country's constitution in a section where it says the law would be implemented in retrospect, meaning those workers who have already been fired will find recourse when the amendments are implemented. But most ZANU-PF lawmakers are led by Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa and opposition MDC lawmakers are led by Gwadzana East's Nelson Chamisa opposed Chasi's ruling, saying Parliament needed to pass laws that protect workers.
Ironically, Chamisa was part of the legal team that secured the Supreme Court decision that led to the indiscriminate firing of workers. Priscilla Misaera Mgimushonga of the MDC formation led by Professor Weltman Ngube said the decision to overturn the legal committee's adverse report was not wise, adding it would backfire in future. She warned fellow lawmakers against taking populist decisions that would hound the same workers that they seek to protect. More than 20,000 workers have been fired since the July 17 Supreme Court ruling, which allowed employers to fire workers on 3 months' notice. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera is covering the debate in Parliament.
Hi, Ivan.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, Ivan. What is going on now in Parliament? Do you see the bill passing through the House today?
Yeah, it looks like it will pass. Right now, it's now on second reading stage. MPs are contributing, giving views on the bill. And after this stage, we go to what they call the committee stage, from which it will be read for the third time. That means it will have passed in the lower house.
We also understand
it will be referred to the Senate.
Okay. We also understand that there were some disagreements earlier in the House. What led to that?
Yeah, debate on the bill delayed because the legal committee passed an adverse report on the bill in relation to the Section 18. That's the transition provision, which says this law will be applied in retrospect. That is to the 17th of July, when the Supreme Court passed the judgment that has led to the indiscriminate firing of workers. But as soon as the PLC presented its report, it was trashed by members from both sides of the House, the MDC, ZANU-PF, which MPs led by the Vice President on the ZANU-PF side, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and Nelson Chamisa on the MDC side, saying that the decision of the PLC must be overturned, must be overwritten, and Parliament should proceed to pass the bill as it was in the interest of the workers. But Priscilla Misaerambu of the MDC formation, led by Professor Walsh Kunguwe, stood the ground and said Parliament must avoid passing populist, making populist decisions that would appear good for now, but would be unwise and would tend to affect the same workers which they seek to protect.
Oh, thank you so much.
Eventually, after debate lasting for an hour, the PLC's decision was over, and that's why where we are now.
Thank you so much, Ivan. We have run out of time. There was Ivan Chifera reporting for Studio 7 from Parliament.
The Southern African Development Community Heads of State Summit ended in Botswana's capital, Gaborone, today with a call for the region to find ways to accelerate industrialization. The two-day meeting focused on the implementation of the region's industrialization strategy, which was approved in April at the extraordinary SADC summit held in Zimbabwe's Victoria Falls. On the political side, host President Ian Khama is now SADC chairman after taking over from President Robert Mugabe. Unstable Lesotho was yet again passed over as it was his turn to chair the SADC organ on politics and defense, a portfolio which was given to Mozambique. addressing the summit yesterday on a historic day that marked the 23rd anniversary of the SADC Day, which marks the transformation of the Southern African Development Coordination Conference, SADC, into the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, on 17 August 1992, outgoing SADC Chairman Mr. Mugabe called for accelerated industrial development in the region.
Fellow SADC citizens, I am confident that this strategy, if implemented effectively, has the potential of unlocking opportunities beyond our borders, resulting in sustainable economic growth and development. As we implement this strategy, it is imperative to develop sectors that enhance the effectiveness of this strategy. Infrastructure is one such area. As SADC, we already have the Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan approved in Maputo, Mozambique, in August 2012. It is imperative that SADC works out effective financial mechanisms to fund the regional industrialization strategy and the Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan.
But in an exclusive interview with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, SADC Executive Secretary Stregumena Lawrence Tax said SADC's industrialization is being hampered by a lack of funding.
The heads of state, they looked at both the political front but also the economic front. From the economic front, they received a report on where we are in terms of our industrialization strategy. They appreciated the work which has taken place. But what we are doing currently is to prepare the action plan for the strategy. So that is a priority. But also they recognize that for us to be able to implement the strategy, apart from the commitment by the member state, we need resources, and we cannot depend on resources from contribution by member states. So the importance of private sector being part of this endeavor was very much emphasized because they are key implementers and key partners. But also getting alternative sources of funds, not just like waiting for member states' contribution or international cooperating partners, was emphasized. That being the case, we, as the Secretariat and the Council of Ministers, have been directed to finalize. Already we have started working on alternative sources of funds, directed to finalize that work as quickly as possible to report to the next summit, which is in August. But that also goes hand in hand with the major decision in that regard, also for them to be able to ensure that we are really focused on industrialization. From now on, they'll be receiving reports on progress on key milestones in each and every ordinary summit.
Lastly, Doctor, there are some who are saying the economic situation in Zimbabwe is deteriorating and might be a cause for concern. Is this a country that you are also looking at in future?
Obviously, Zimbabwe is our member state, and whoever is saying the economic situation is deteriorating, I don't know what are the factors which we are looking into. If you look at the microeconomic indicators, that is not the indication. And if you go there, you'll be there on the ground. You'll see a lot of economic development which is taking place, infrastructure is booming up. Even the, just when you look at the, you know, sometimes we are deceived by the numbers. And the numbers also depend on the analysis, who does the analysis. But you go there, you can see really that the economy is booming up. But that was not a matter of which was discussed in the summit. But economic development, it is picking up compared to where they were during the sanction period.
That was SADC Executive Secretary Stegomena Lawrence Tex speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
A close look at the government's shrinking revenue base.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A new political survey in the U.S. shows billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump pulling into a clear lead in the crowded 2016 Republican presidential nominating contest.
The Broadcasting Board of Governors, the U.S. government agency that supervises the Voice of America, has announced the appointment of a new chief executive officer, John Lansing, former president of Scripps Networks, which develops and distributes news and entertainment programming over multiple media platforms. Lansing will take up his position next month, the BBG said in a statement.
As chief executive, he will be responsible for supervising all U.S. government-funded civilian international news media. VOA is the largest part of the group, together with other U.S. broadcasters, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, and Radio and TV Mati. BBG estimates its programs reach 215 million people around the world each week. Lansing retired from his post as president of Scripps Networks, the operating division of Scripps Network Interactive, in 2013, but remained on as a consultant. He later was president and chief executive officer of Cable and Telecommunications for Marketing, a group that includes 90 top U.S. and Canadian cable and television companies.
In the second part of our week-long series looking at the country's tattered economy, we are today focusing on the shrinking tax base, with economists fearing the economy is headed for total collapse. As government struggles to pay workers, pensioners, and finance its operations, Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
In his mid-term fiscal policy review recently, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa painted a grim picture of the country's dwindling tax base as the economy slowly grinds to a halt. With the majority of the country's population now out of gainful employment, the government was missing its revenue targets, with analysts claiming most companies, including those that are doing well, are not paying taxes because of political connections. The major source of income for the state, such as value-added tax and pay-as-you-earn, have all been performing below target. Payee collections up to June were $385 million against a $390 million target, while VAT collections were $482 million against a $512 million target. Economist Nyasham Chichwa said, with ongoing company closures and retrenchments, the tax base will shrink even further, and this could result in the government failing to pay its workers by year-end.
Now the challenge will come in terms of where do you get this funding to pay the civil servants at the end of the day. I think like what the minister had said as the year began, where he had said this year there will be no bonuses. I think they had done their focus and they had already seen the challenges that were coming through. But now it's going to be even worse. It's not only going to be an issue of bonuses, but it's going to be also an issue of salaries. Are people going to get their salaries?
Former Treasury Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya said, the current scenario is very dangerous as it can lead to the collapse of the government and the state.
But if you shrink the economy, you're setting a precedent for your own collapse as a government and inevitably as a state. So you are forced into a very precarious situation, a small corner where you have to start reviewing your friends and looking and changing and shifting your ideological focuses and things like that. And where we are right now, we are in a situation where inevitably government has got to start reviewing carefully its friends and its ideological values.
With 83% of the budget going towards employment costs, The government is already failing to finance its operations, prompting the opposition and other stakeholders to call on the government to abandon its policies and call for an all-stakeholders conference to address the country's socio-economic problems. Allocations to public institutions such as hospitals have been far less than expected and unable to meet even the basic needs. Analysts say as a result, many people are losing their lives unnecessarily because the hospitals are not well equipped, also in the absence of social welfare structure to serve the poor. For example, in 2014, government allocated $13 million to public hospitals when the hospitals owed supplies more than $36 million. Indications are that the government has been getting revenues from some of its companies, such as firms mining diamonds in the Marangi area, to finance its operations, but options are running out as diamond revenues have fallen and the companies are being merged. Telecommunications giant Econet is one of the very few companies oiling the government's machinery by paying tax on time, economists say. Mbada Diamond chairman Robert Mshanga last year told Parliament his company was at one time contributing towards civil servant salaries.
I would say when we had the crisis for civil servant salaries, I think Mbada was at one stage contributing 15 to 20 million US dollars a week into the national fiscus. And those states are there and we can make them available.
Manyanya said the government could be forced to look for money elsewhere, including raiding accounts of its companies, as happened during the hyperinflation era, when it ended up even raiding accounts of individuals and non-governmental organizations.
You look for where money is and get it and fund whatever is supposed to be funded at that time. And always it's not going to be enough. So we are in a steep climb. It's not a climb, we are going down. What I continuously refer to as a plunge. We're going down and government has to, I think this is where the best friends of government will show themselves.
He added, a viable option for government would be to borrow money or look for outside help, but its poor record in servicing debts and poor relations with the outside world means nothing may come out of the efforts to borrow externally. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says he has solutions in mind and has introduced a number of tax measures to improve government revenues. This includes taxing benefits for executives and empowering the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority to collect outstanding taxes from private and public companies. The Auditor General's 2014 report on the operations of state enterprises and parastatals said these companies owed Zimra more than $1 billion in uncommitted tax revenues. But Michichwa and Manyanya say lack of transparency in government expenditure and corruption, among other factors, led to tax evasion by many companies and individuals.
Because once you are benefiting from your tax and you see the benefit you are getting from your tax, it's easier for you to pay, because you know that as much as I pay at the end of the day, I'm going to get a benefit from the taxes that I'm paying.
Analysts say the government should reduce foreign travel and luxurious spending by ministers and other top government officials. Independent economist James Joa says the gloomy mood in the country can only be improved if the ruling ZANU-PF government admitted it has failed to run the country or rescue the dying economy.
So that joint efforts are made within the country and outside to start to revive the economy.
Statistics from the National Statistics Agency show that more than 60% of the country's population are poor and that 70% of the formerly employed earn about $350 monthly. In some provinces, like Matabeleland North, poverty levels are above 81%. About 4 million people of the country's population are now operating in the untaxed informal sector, which has not been getting support from the government or the formal financial sector. Economists say the only way out for the government is to implement policies that stimulate economic growth and development. Of major importance, they add, is the need for Harare to introduce investor-friendly policies to attract the much-needed foreign investment that will result in employment creation and increase in the faltering tax base. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Tomorrow we will focus on vendors as we continue with our week-long series looking at the country's economy. Thank you.
The killing of Zimbabwe's famous lion, Cecil, is now chewing onto the country's political fabric with fresh calls for the nation to carry out a land audit to get rid of some senior ruling party officials who are occupying several farms in animal conservancies. Former Mashingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Basikiti says the Save Conservancy and several others, which were invaded by some ZANU-PF officials, including current ministers, are degenerating due to alleged overexploitation of wildlife through uncontrolled trophy hunting. Basikiti tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the conservancies can only be saved if a proper land audit is conducted and some current occupants who own multiple farms are kicked out for the benefit of local communities.
These people are now double dipping. They have 82 farms on the other and conservancies on the other hand. So they are depriving the communities of benefits. The president agreed with me and reversed that the whole exercise or game was a game of corruption by the same corrupt people who were made to remain in government or were promoted perhaps for the same reasons of being corrupt into government at the moment.
And now looking at the broader issue concerning the ownership of this kind of lucrative industry in Zimbabwe in general, do you think that there are some other politicians in other parts of the country that are actually holding on to these conservancies like in Victoria Falls and other places?
There are quite many. I tell you, I only bulldozed Mashingo.
So now, is there a way of dismantling this?
It's voting ZANU-PF out of power, and the constitution made a provision that there be a land audit and a land commission. That land commission is not even up to now, 3 years after the conclusion of the constitution, been put in place.
That was former Mashingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Basikiti speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Mashingo. ZANU-PF Central Committee member David Ndlovu agrees, noting that there is need to address this issue, which has in the past angered President Robert Mugabe.
What the party said, and what I know, is a resolution of the party that there should be a land audit, and people should not occupy everywhere, because people should not take everything for themselves. We should share, and not somebody taking everything for his own. This is what we fought against, and this is what we don't want.
But as we speak right now, there are many officials, senior ZANU-PF officials, occupying these farms. And is there anything that the party is actually doing right now to control that kind of thing?
The party policy is that even the president himself, they said they must vacate. They shouldn't own what or chew what they can, their mouth can take. Because some are chewing what, more than what their mouth can take, which is what they are saying. And we need to move towards removing that thinking. Because that is actually what I would call individualism, which we don't want.
So we've heard that the president has talked about it and nothing is happening. So which means nothing will happen, Mr. Love?
Something must happen as long as people talk about it. Some of those who are supposed to be investigating themselves.
That was David Ntlove, ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking with Studio 7, Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
Tomorrow, Blessing Zulu interviews a prominent Harare lawyer and former finance minister Tendai Biti about the country's 120 prisoners who are on death row. Here's a snippet.
There are about 120 people that are on death row. That is to say, they've been sentenced and convicted of murder and sentenced to death. There are so many that the normal prison that is designed specifically to cater for death row prison, Harare Central Prison, can't cater. So there's been an overflow of death row prisoners, and about 20 of them are now located at Chikurubi Prison.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts on the Youth Connection will be discussing with young Zimbabweans in the diaspora about their experiences living, getting educated and working in other countries. We want to hear from you. Tell us your experiences on the Youth Connection today.
And now to recap today's top stories. Parliament is on course to pass the Labour Amendment Bill as it seeks to stop continuing job losses in the country.
bread shortages loom as wheat production is hampered by inadequate power supply in the country.
And the Southern African Development Community Heads of State Summit ended in Botswana's capital, Gaborone, today with a call for the region to find ways to accelerate industrialization.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. And do please stand by for the news in Ndebele.